Good morning again. I had someone ask this week if I was still at the church because they hadn't seen me in worship for a while. And if you all remember, in May, Chris Murphy, our children's director, retired. And so since then, I have been outside most of Sunday mornings with our kids ministry, making sure all of that goes smoothly and organizing all of our amazing volunteer team. So I am grateful this morning. Rosa Hurd is out there. They're in good hands. And that means I can be in here with all of you. And I'm really excited about that. I want to start this morning by sharing a little bit about our family, something about this past year of pandemic time, and that is that I am pretty sure the Arnold family over this past year has logged in more screen time than the collective 5 years that came before. So anyone relate to that? You think you've watched a little bit more than you did before? So much so that when it came time for me to write our Christmas card letter, I'm writing, and I get to the place where you brag about all your children's crowning achievements for the year, and I paused, and I found myself writing about all the shows they binge-watched during quarantine time. And that's true. And of the five of us, I probably watch the least. But when I do start a series or something that I'm really interested in, I am all in. And once I start, I cannot stop. Like, it is a race for me to get to the end, because just like a movie, I have to have closure and conclusion. So I just binge watch through the whole thing. And about a month and a half ago, I started watching a show called The Queen's Gambit. And as soon as I started that, I was just in it and was watching. We'd come home, I'd get dinner ready, kind of settle everything, and then watch two or three shows every night just to get to the end. And it happened. The day came that I got to that final episode. And if you've ever binge watched a show, you ever have had this happen, you know, you get to the final episode and you feel this sadness because you've spent all this time with these people, these characters, and then it's over and they're gone. And so I'm sitting there feeling sad, thinking, okay, this is a little ridiculous. I know that these people aren't real. And so I'm thinking, how do I get rid of this sad, sad feeling? And I decide, you know, the best way to self-medicate is to start a new show. So I didn't have anything that I was really interested in watching again. So I went back out on Netflix and just clicked the first thing that was appeared at the top of the screen. And I watched my first episode of Cobra Kai. if you have no idea what I'm talking about, it's totally fine because I had no clue. But if you ever saw the Karate Kid movies back in the 80s, they have taken all of that original cast and characters, brought them like some 30 years later back into the same characters, the same kind of storyline, only this time all of the karate teenage drama is happening with their high school children. And I was a child of the 80s. I had a poster of the Karate Kid on my wall in seventh grade. And so, you know, I was all in for this show and blew through three seasons. Don't judge, you were at church. Today, we are here and we're continuing our sermon series on the book of Mark. We started this at Christmas and we're going to end on Easter. And it's looking at this in-between time in Jesus' life, in between his birth and the resurrection. And we're looking at his life and how he lived, because as Jesus followers, as Christians, that is what we want to do. We want our lives to reflect Jesus in us. And a couple of weeks ago, Rob preached and he talked about rabbis and how disciples or students of rabbis would want to emulate their lives after their teacher. They would want everything that they thought and spoke and did to be a reflection of the one that they followed. And so as Jesus followers, that's what we're trying to do with our lives. And so we really need to know what Jesus' life was like. And as we've come to this series, each week it's been like we're showing up for the next episode. And so this morning, we're going to do that again, only instead of one episode, we are going to binge watch all of chapter 5. And it's a little bit crazy because really pastors don't preach on all of chapter 5 at one time because there's a whole lot there. There's three different people, three different encounters with Jesus, three different stories of healing, and really three different sermons that could all be taken individually, and you could spend a whole lot of time on that. So we are going to be really ambitious this morning and lean in. It's going to be really good, but we are going to look at all of chapter 5, and I think that when we look at all of it collectively together, that we're gonna see some things rise. We're gonna notice some things that we may not have seen otherwise by watching them each on their own. And so as we start, when you start a show, what always comes first? The recap. So as we get to chapter 5, we have to start with the recap, which is really chapter 4. And so in chapter 4, Jesus has been with his disciples. He goes out on the lake. They're in a boat, and the storms come. And there's this huge storm. The waves are crashing over the side. The disciples think they're going to die. Jesus is asleep. They run over, and Jesus, wake up. We're dying. And Jesus does this magnificent thing where he stands, and I just picture him, you know, raising his hands to the storm, and he says, "Peace, be still." And the storm dies off, and everything calms down, and now they're still in the boat on the lake. And they continue across to the lake, to the other side. And so that's where we start in chapter 5, episode 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For this man had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and he broke the irons on his feet, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and he would cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and he fell on his knees in front of him and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus? Son of the Most High God, in God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." And then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send him out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hillside, and the demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." And so he gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out, went into the pigs, and the herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake, and they were drowned. Well, those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and then the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. So this is good, right? There's good and evil, plot twist, action and drama, everything you need for a great show. One of the things that I get to do every year at our church that I love is that I get to lead our middle school and high school students through something called confirmation or student discovery. And it's a year-long experience where we really dig into what it means to be a Jesus follower, what it means to become a member of the church. And one of the things that we do is we read through this gospel. We read through the Gospel of Mark. And we go chapter by chapter, and students get to ask their questions, the things that are confusing, the things they're curious about. And as they ask, we each class time spend some time trying to dig in and get at those answers. And I've done this enough years over time that I can anticipate what's coming. I know probably the questions that are going to be asked. And I know that when we come to chapter 5, there are going to be a lot of questions about demons. They're curious about what are demons, are there still demons today? Lots of those kinds of things. And I also know that there probably are going to be one or two students in the class, usually not the boys, who take issue with the pigs, because the pigs were innocent, and what did they go to deserve that fate after all? Well, this man in the tombs, at that time, people didn't bury dead bodies in the ground. Instead, they would dig spaces, holes out of the limestone rock, and then they would take the bodies and they would put them into those crevices. So when it says the man lived among the tombs, he really was living with the dead. And you can imagine the decay and the stench that would come with that. We know this man was a Gentile. So according to the Jews, because of his race, he was someone that was on the outside. We also know that this man was tormented. A legion was a Roman army. It might be made up of 200 to several thousand troops, and they also were known for the terror that they would inflict. So they would torture and they would kill. And this man, probably at some point in his life, had seen a legion of soldiers marching past. And so when Jesus asks him, "What is your name?" the best word that he could grab onto to describe the terror that was happening inside of him was legion. People knew this man. People knew this man, but he didn't have any friends. We can leave it to scholars to talk about, you know, were the demons really real demons, or was he afflicted by some kind of mental illness that they didn't understand or have words for? But either way, people saw this man as a threat. And so they took chains, and they attempted to chain him up to subdue him. And in the original text, this word for subdue is the same word that they use for subduing wild animals. They didn't even see him as human. And so they tried to tie him up, but he was so strong, he would break free. And that's why he was able to roam around and to cry out and to inflict self-harm. This man was surrounded by death, but really he had died long ago. His quality of life had left. He was trapped in suffering. He was cut off from community. He was really cut off from his own humanity. This was someone that everyone avoided, that people pretended not to see. And by Jewish law, he was unclean. When we see a destitute person approaching us for help, we may want to turn away or avoid eye contact or pretend that we don't see. But this isn't what Jesus did. When this man approached, he didn't turn away, he didn't avoid him. This man came towards Jesus and Jesus walked towards him. And then in this amazing act of grace, of healing, he takes what is tormenting this man inside and he casts it into a herd of pigs. And those pigs rush into the sea and they drown. And in that death, this man is restored and he is given new life. Well, the pig farmers, not so happy that all their pigs are dead, and so they come, the townspeople come, and they really demand that Jesus leave. They don't want him there. And so Jesus gets back in that boat and he heads back to sea to cross the lake again. And that's where we come to chapter 5, episode 2. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. And then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came. And when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, and he pleaded earnestly with him, my daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so she will be healed and live. And so Jesus went with him. So this time, there's another man that's approaching Jesus. Only this time, this isn't a man to be avoided. This man was a synagogue leader. He was a Jew. He was respected and wealthy. He had a role model family. He followed all the rules. This was someone who was on the inside. And he had a daughter. He had a 12-year-old daughter who was sick and dying. And just like the demon-possessed man, this man too was desperate. And so he does everything the right way. He comes to Jesus, he falls at his feet, he recognizes Jesus' power, and he asks Jesus for help. And so Jesus gets up and he begins to go with him, but at that moment, this story gets interrupted. And it's interrupted by a woman who clearly is not doing things the right way. And so we pause here to jump to chapter 5, episode 3. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors, and she had spent all she had. Yet, instead of getting better, she grew worse. And when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd, and she touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. And immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd, and he asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see all the people crowding against you," his disciple answered, "and yet you can ask who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. And then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet. And trembling with fear, she told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering." So I can remember clearly the year in student discovery that we got to this story. And it was a seventh grade boy who is still at the church, so I'm not going to name any names. But he sat in the class and we talked about this story and he raised his hand. He said, "Okay, Miss Jen, I just don't get it. Like, this woman cut her arm and she just has been bleeding for 12 years and it won't stop." I had this pause, for I had a decision to make, right? And so I answered his question. I said, "Nope, not like the woman cut her arm." And I laid it all out for him, and his eyes got big, and he said, "Oh." And I don't think he asked another question that day. Because this woman was experiencing continuous bleeding for 12 years that was much more personal. This was bleeding that kept her from the temple. It kept her from having a family. It kept her from community. And this was bleeding that made her unclean. And because this woman was unclean, everything that she touched was unclean. And so it was her job, it was her responsibility to make sure she didn't touch anyone. Because if anyone touched her or something she had touched, they would have to go through a purification ritual. So where Jairus was rich, this woman is poor. We know that she spent everything that she had on treatments for her affliction, and she's desperate. Just like the demon-possessed man, just like Jairus, she is desperate and she comes to Jesus. She thinks, if I can just crowd in and nobody notices, maybe then I will be healed. Maybe this is the answer. Jesus, we know, he's already on a mission. He's already headed to do something else. He's going to heal the daughter of the synagogue leader, the man who came and asked in the responsible way. But this woman doesn't ask. This woman doesn't ask at all. She crowds in and she grabs his clothing at this attempt at healing. And when she touched him, she broke all the rules. But Jesus doesn't continue on with this mission. He doesn't ignore her. What does he do? He stops. He stops and he turns around and he looks for her. He asks who she is, and then he tells everyone there, everyone in the crowd, that this woman has been healed, so they know. And in that moment, this woman is restored, and she is given new life. And so this happens, and Jesus goes right back to where he was. So we jump back to chapter 5, episode 2. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told them, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He didn't let anyone follow him, except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. And he went in and he said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him, and he went in where the child was, and he took her by the hand, and he said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." And immediately, the little girl stood up, and she began to walk around. She was 12 years old. And at this, they were completely astonished. Dead bodies were unclean. You didn't touch them, and dead bodies certainly did not come back to life. When Jesus and his disciples reached the house, the ritual mourners are already there. This is what they did. This was their business. They knew when someone was dead. And so that's why they laughed when Jesus said she was only asleep. Jesus, instead of walking away, goes to this little girl and he touches her. And when he does that, what was dead is restored and given new life. So this morning we have three great episodes, three different people and three different stories of healing. And in these stories, I think there are some significant things for us to pay attention to, for us in this moment of time, in this pandemic, in this year. First, in every one of these stories, people were given labels that separated and divided them. This man was mentally ill, not mentally sound, and he was a Gentile, not a Jew. This was a woman and not a man. This was someone who was poor and not rich. Jairus' daughter, she was a lost cause. And all of them are unclean. We have a rich man who was in, a poor woman who is not, and a demon-possessed man that doesn't even come close. We have these stories. We have these three stories of healing. And in every one of these stories, people were there and they were watching. And they thought they knew which side Jesus was on. After all, he was in. He was a Jew. He was a man. He knew all the scriptures and all the rules. But Jesus didn't see the labels. Or I think he saw them, but he just didn't care. His focus was not on what he needed to do to keep people on his side happy. His focus was just being obedient to God. We like to create labels. And this year, ours have come with many different words. But we've used them to draw teams and to create categories that allow us to ignore the fact that whoever is across from us on any particular issue is also an image bearer of God. I think we have used labels to hold people we disagree with at a distance. In all of these episodes, people were avoided and labeled and dismissed, and there were sides. But Jesus walked on both sides. He healed the rich man's daughter and the poor woman's bleeding. He changed his agenda for the Jewish synagogue leader and for the demon-possessed Gentile. We know when we read the whole of the Gospels, we read the whole of Jesus' life, that people didn't like it when Jesus didn't follow the rules. In our country, we have political division and racial division, wealth division, church division, virus division, family division. And we label who is clean and who is unclean, who is in and who is out, who is us and who is them. And I know for me, this chapter of Mark chapter 5, has challenged me this week as I have asked, how do I see humanity? How do I see the image of God in all others around me? How do I shape my life to look like Jesus as a Jesus follower? And not just to look like Jesus, but how do I shape my life so that I am acting more like Jesus? Whether I'm on social media or in conversations or even in my own thoughts that nobody else can see. In these three episodes, it isn't just about who Jesus was with, but it also was about what he did. This last week, I was sitting in this worship service, and one of our worship leaders, Audra, shared some very personal things about her life. And I was so grateful for her reminder to us that when things are hard, God is good. And it struck me how in this year, where probably a lot of us have spent way too much time reading news headlines, I know I have, that when all of that has been happening, life has been happening. Our lives, lives apart from news headlines, lives that contain our own stories of pain and isolation, of estrangement and struggle. This week, I prayed for a woman who lost her father. I listened to a man weep as he was driving to a nursing home to see his wife, who he had not hugged for a year. I listened to other stories of pain and of struggle. And I can tell you right here that life apart from headlines is happening. And sometimes I think we may assume or maybe afraid that we know what the end of the story is going to be. But in each of these episodes in Mark, people had thought their story was written. They thought, I'm worthless. I'm alone. Things are not going to get better. But what happens? They encounter Jesus. And here's what I think is so profound about these healing stories, that Jesus was God. Jesus could have healed these people any way he wanted. He could have just said the word and they would be healed. He could have done that from a safe, protected distance. That isn't what he did, is it? In every case, he went towards them and was with them, and he saw them and he touched them. He didn't care what that was going to cost him. He made it personal, and in doing that, he gave them worth. He restored their dignity, and he took something that was dead, and he gave it new life. The demon-possessed man lived with the dead. The bleeding woman was socially dead, and the little daughter was dead. They all thought the story was written, but Jesus said, no, there's going to be another episode. There is going to be another season. This is not the end. This year, I think we are looking for hope. We are looking for hope, and many of us are coming to God in our own stories, in our own lives, with our own requests for healing and for new life. For some of us, there have been places of death, things that grieve us, relationships lost, things taken away, even harm inflicted on us. One writer compared us to the demon-possessed man and said, we are just as battered, though we may do a better job of hiding it behind our coherent words, our well-kept homes, and our smart attire. The power of the gospel is for us. For some of us, there are some things in our lives that are unclean. Things in our lives that are separating us from others and separating us from God. Things that we need to ask forgiveness for. Things we may not know how to change or walk away from. We find that somehow we have gotten off track. We're not who we want to be. We have hurt and we have disappointed others. We too need to be clean. And we all need to know, all of us need to know, that Jesus gives new episodes to our stories that we think might be over. Jesus gives us new ways forward. Jesus takes away shame and darkness. He forgives, he restores, and he makes us clean. That's what Jesus does for us and for the world, regardless of what side we are on and what labels that we wear. This morning, it's not Easter. That's coming. It's not Easter, but each of these are Easter resurrection stories. And my story and your story, those are also resurrection stories. And this is the good news. This is the good news of Mark, the good news of the Gospels, that Jesus Christ gives new life. He will make us clean. And so I want to invite my friend Margie to come up, and she is going to sing a song. And it's going to be easy to see how this song could really be an anthem for all three of these stories this morning. But I really hope you won't just see it as their song, but you would see it as a song for all of us. Because I think all of us, when we really look inside, have some things in our own lives that we need to be clean. And Jesus is the one that's going to do that. Please listen to these words.
Shattered, you see whole. I see broken, but you see beautiful, and you're helping me to believe you're restoring me. You will make worthy. You wash me in mercy. I am clean. There's nothing too dirty that you can. Thank you.
Jesus is the one who will make us clean. Jesus is the one that offers us forgiveness. Jesus is the one that sees us and is not afraid of what he sees. He moves towards us and he invites each of us to follow him with not just part of our lives, but all of our lives. And so pray with me at this time. God, thank you for your love for us. Thank you that you know us deeply inside and out. And God, help us as we look at our lives, those things that nobody else can see but you. Help us to be brave enough, like these people in the stories, to come to you, to ask for your help. God, we know that we need you to restore us. All of us need every day new life. So God, do that in us. Let us be a church, like Crystal said, that is known for our love. Let us be a church where people clearly see that we don't get it perfect and we don't do it right all the time, but we have as our first priority you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.